Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today on Off Tockle Empire, the final arrival of crappy fall is here, which means the sun's not coming out anymore. Which, to this Illinois fan, seems appropriate. It shouldn't.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!
You're listening to Off Tockle Empire, a Big Ten football podcast hosted on the SB Nation Off Tackle Empire brand. I am big ol' waste of time named Thumposaurus, also known as Steve Braun, formerly known as Fat Lacoste, formerly known during the game when Matt Lacoste complained that I changed my name. I changed it to Big Time Tummy DeVito, and he was happier with that. But anyway, that's on Twitter. Joined, as always, by my intrepid co-host, Andrew Chesky, Michigan State Allegiance. And we've had our first snow. It went from 70 to 30 overnight. So we are in depressing season.
At least with the snow, it's kind of nice to look at, though. I will be honest, it's like one of the few things that I get sentimental about is snow flying, especially before the new year. Like a week or two into January, it's like, okay, enough of this. Let's get to the part where we can go outside and the air doesn't hurt to breathe again. But this time of year, November and December, I really don't mind snow. And it's also one of those things where usually the first time you see the snowflake on the forecast app, it's like, all right, so there'll be some flurries in the air. Maybe it'll be wet, but no, it was like actual snow today. Probably not guessed it because it's too warm, but anyway. It was certainly a week that was in the Big Ten. We have limited firsthand knowledge and have to do some highlight watching and box score delving and not sort me. Of application of previous experience for very different reasons. Certainly understandable on your part. I had, among other things, a pediatrician appointment on Saturday for my less than week-old child now, and so having finally joined Team Dad, I feel a deeper and keener appreciation for teams that run the damn ball. But that being said, the way I have these lined out, we're going to have to wait to get to the Big Ten West. That's okay. I can be patient. I'm a parent now, and so sometimes you just have to not do anything that you want to do, and you have to do things that have to be done first. That
my strategy is to find enough riffs on these games I didn't watch or pay attention to due to a catatonic state that it becomes too late for you to stay here before we get to the Big Ten West decider, and I don't have to talk about it.
It's entirely possible. I tried to put these in roughly chronological order, so it shouldn't be too far. I don't think you can run out the clock on me. Because again, like here, even with a very fortunate sleep cycle for the young one so far, I have no complaints about that. Like we're making it work. Time has still lost all meaning in the last several days to an extent that I had previously thought impossible. So yeah, I know Millie. Ow! Ugh, she got me. So we'll get into these games. The fortunate thing is the first few of them, there's really not a whole lot to talk about. So we can start with Indiana, Ohio State. This is a 6-touchdown victory for the Buckeyes. I suspect it probably didn't feel that close on the field. If you're looking for it, we'll start with the big picture and then maybe go back down a little if there's anything to find. So, ow, maybe stop. Mayan Williams injured in this game. I think he ended up being carted off. This was with Trey Henderson already sitting out Evan Pryor, of course, has long since been injured and lost for the year. So now Ohio State is really down to Dallin Hayden and receiver slash running back Xavier Johnson as their options on the ground, depending on how long Williams is out. Not exactly what you want in terms of looking for offensive balance with the Michigan game coming over the horizon. But that being said, in a game where you score 56 points, got to stop thinking of Indiana's defense as being especially formidable. I saw that recently the stat they're giving up well over 30 points a game this year. And they've actually got just one Big Ten win in their last 16 now. That's approaching some stretches that you don't want to be compared to.
Yeah, we're getting into really ugly territory here with Indiana. And by really ugly territory, I mean prior Indiana.
right.
Okamoto compared it to he's going to do a Jerry DiNardo, which is to say win two games and then three the next year.
Oh, dear.
So we'll see just how long his ears are by the end of this season.
What does have to be said for Tom Allen is he's at least trying to push some buttons. I had totally missed this, but they did dismiss their offensive line coach earlier in the season. They've cycled quarterbacks, not in a frantic way, but in a like when you're a first-person shooter and you're up against a boss you haven't fought before and you don't know what's going to work. So it's like, I'm going to shoot this guy with this thing for a while. Well, that's not doing anything. I'm running away. I'm switching guns on the run. Let me try this gun. That's not doing anything either. He's doing a lot of damage to me. And then on the next spawn, you try a third gun and you still don't get a whole lot. So
desperately needing Purdue to lose one of their last two games, I'm hoping that Bazelak's trip to the bench is simply the coach is trying to, you know, do the equivalent of finding a reliable way to awaken Gohan's hidden power, right? Wake up the Bazelak from the end of the Illinois game. You know, somewhere in the back of the practices while the rest of the team is practicing, they're like, you know, throwing him out in the wilderness against a T-Rex, throwing him into a cliff, whatever, doing whatever it takes to awaken the hidden power again. They saw it once, and they cannot duplicate it.
You're hoping Tom Allen is Piccolo. I have to say, I think that's unlikely. The way this game flow played out, Bazelak got the first three series. Indiana went 3 and out on all of them, and then Dexter Williams II went the rest of the way.
Well, yeah, you got to get fourth quarter Bazelak involved here. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, what is the value of winning another game the rest of the season? Well, it gets you off the mat.
Maybe puts Purdue out of the Big Ten title game.
If you're talking about red meat for your fan base, yes.
Nobody's going to question you very much.
Putting a nail through the foot of your blood rival as they try to have their biggest season in
one damn year.
In terms of accomplishments. Like, yes, I get that they won games last year, but in terms of like winning the stuff that you put things up in your facility for, you don't do that for like 8-win seasons. A division title, though, would be a big accomplishment. And so, yeah, Indiana will have some decisions to make here with a still winnable game against Michigan State. I don't think we're a team that's beyond the reach of a program in Indiana's spot right now. But it's another one of those things where maybe it's easy to say with hindsight, but Indiana's problem for years on end now has been their offensive line. Towards the end of last year, they threw Donovan McCauley in there as a bit of a dual threat. He was nowhere near ready. They moved him to receiver. Now they have their other dual threat, younger quarterback Dexter Williams, who they put in there. And they moved the ball a little bit when he was in. Granted, maybe Ohio State's kind of calling off the dogs a bit. But if you have a bad offensive line, we've seen historically in this conference, there's really two ways to deal with that. One is the kind of quick passing game that Northwestern always used that was impossible. Like, even the best pass rushers can't get to the quarterback in that short of time. And the other is to use a scrambler.
Yeah, the Northwestern thing, the key thing there is like the, you know, 50 attempts for 200 yards, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, if you're trying to run an actual balanced offense, that's not super helpful. But if you can't run the ball at all, and Indiana cannot run the ball at all, substituting in a short passing game or getting your quarterback involved in the run game are the two ways to kind of make that work. And it really did feel like stylistically they stuck with their approach to the run game a little bit too long. Not to say they stuck with heavy use of the run game, because it's been a long time since they were balanced in terms of run versus pass. They've been pass-oriented most of the season. So I do think they've kind of done about as much as you could expect with the personnel they have. But again, part of the reason their personnel are limited is because they went out and got transfer pieces everywhere except the part that they needed, which is the offensive line. And I know we talked about this before, so we'll move on. But anyway, there was not a whole lot to see in the game itself. Ohio State dominated from wire to wire. Really, their running back health situation is about the only point of interest left. They are going to get a challenge from a Maryland team that could conceivably keep up with them next year. So it's not like they can feel free to sleepwalk to the end of the season. But that's about all there is to say about that game, really.
Well, then I'll say no more. At 100%, I could have derailed you, but I am also just so depleted.
I have a feeling you're going to find a sensor bean somewhere in here. I'm going to keep, I'll keep prodding. I'll throw you like a punter tidbit in here at some point and see if I can prod some life out of you. So also in the noon slot, Rutgers 21, Michigan State 27. And if you had told me before kickoff of this game that the winner would be the team that successfully blocked a field goal and then crisply executed two field goals of their own in the second half, I would have been cursing up and down under my breath that, probably with my child in my arms, over a loss to Rutgers in really the only way that it would have been very likely to happen, because I would not have assumed that either offense was going to be especially successful today. But no, what we had instead was Michigan State finally coming up on the positive end of an eventful special teams day, getting a block of a Rutgers field goal that set them up with good field position, and Ben Patton finally looking like a normal kicker instead of like booting it out of the stadium on a 90 degree angle from the direction he's facing when he kicks it. Just hitting two normal field goals, just a couple of normal ass field goals.
So very much kicking Joey Hauser. Is that how you sum him up? Where it's like, this looks like a pretty capable field goal shooter and barely resembles a human.
Up until about February of this year, you would have gotten me to agree with that. But I have to say, even as much as of a detractor of him as I was in his first year and a half as a Spartan, Hauser got dramatically better towards the end of last year. And he looked pretty good against Gonzaga. Michigan State tipped off about 20 minutes ago against Kentucky. He looks a lot better. He looks basically like the player he was supposed to be. I think by the time this season is over, the inescapable conclusion is going to be he had an awful case of COVID that took him a long time to get over. I mean, most of Michigan State's team caught it in that first year. So I'm hesitant to put all the blame for how they played on the hard court there. But yeah, so anyway, to get back to this absolutely thrilling football game, which honestly, I mean, as far as what these two teams have occasionally done this year, it was a decent game. Both offenses moved the ball capably, settled within a few dozen yards of 450 on both sides, so you would honestly expect more points to have been scored, but Michigan State, I mean, both teams missed at least one fourth down, if I remember correctly. So we discussed going into this was basically a bowl game death match, especially for Rutgers, who now has to beat Penn State and Maryland the last 2 weeks of the season to get to a bowl. Michigan State just needs one from either Indiana at home or a trip to Penn State, so it's going to have to be Indiana this week. But very much we discussed, it's true both teams need this game. Rutgers needs it way, way more. So we mentioned Penn State, and we'll get onto them in the next of the noon games. Maryland 0, Penn State 30. It's been a few seasons in a row now where, because Penn State has not been able to get over the Michigan/Ohio State hump, they're out of the picture for division titles, conference titles, national titles. And so we spent a decent amount of time navel-gazing, like, does this team stay motivated? Do they stay focused? And really, for the most part, the answer has actually been yeah. Part of that's easy to understand because so many of their players are putting together NFL tape.
Of course, the other question we had was, can an ascendant Maryland prove that it belongs firmly in that second tier?
Nope.
It's about the most resounding nope you can get. 134 yards of offense with a pretty healthy core group of players.
About as healthy as they get, yeah. I mean, Maryland usually by this time of year is missing several guys, but to the best of my knowledge, they're running pretty close to full cylinders. Tagovailoa has been healthy again for a couple of weeks here. All their major receiving pieces are in place. It's got to be said that Penn State's defense has quietly become one of the better individual units in the conference. Very much a credit to Manny Diaz picking himself off the mat a little bit after getting unceremoniously trash-binned by his alma mater and then quickly accepting another job. Brent Pry had such success here, but Diaz has really carried it on every bit as successful.
Well, it's also a job that he was much better at than a head coach.
Yeah. And you see that sometimes. Like, there are just guys that are not really meant to sit in the big chair. Yeah, exactly. Except there are guys who can put together an aggressive, hard-hitting defense. Sometimes,
Venables so far.
Kind of looking that way, isn't it? Or maybe it's just something about being in the color red that makes his defenses not work.
Maybe the team he inherited plays on the West Coast now.
Oklahoma may want to consider changing their detergent in their facilities and washing out some more of the red to try to shift it a little bit closer to Clemson orange and maybe see if that works. This is my have you tried turning it off and on again, because I don't know what the problem is there, other than what you mentioned, a lot of players left. So as far as the Penn State Maryland game goes, again, Penn State's defense not only replacing a successful coordinator but a ton of players on all three levels, really. But they look loaded for bear, really, for years to come. Abdul Carter is going to be an absolute force of nature. I mean, he looks every bit as good as Micah Parsons ever did, or choose your dominant Penn State linebacker, Sean Lee, Navarro Bowman. And he, very much looks worthwhile of carrying that number 11 for them. So, and on the offensive side, I think by next year, Singleton and Allen will be recognized as the best combination of backs in the conference, and they still get two more years of those guys. So that's before we even get to Drew Aller. The future is very bright here, even with a present that's really not too bad. They're pretty well set up to win 10 games. That would probably send them to the Orange Bowl. They absolutely crapped the bed against Michigan, lost to Ohio State, and they got to figure out how to beat those teams. But there's no reason to think they don't have the resources and tools on hand to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the only way to ever get there is, the more chances you spend almost there, the better the odds that you will someday get there. Right?
Yeah.
So you got to keep within striking distance. You could argue that they are. Things haven't. They're certainly closer than anybody else by orders of magnitude.
Yes, I think that's probably true, and the level that they recruit at is such that, for example, even with a relatively inexperienced quarterback stepping into the starting role next year with Drew Aller, the guy has such a high ceiling, has shown flashes this year, it may just end up being that it wasn't going to happen with Sean Clifford for whatever reason. He's played mostly fine this year, but it does feel like the offense is it's running at a bit less than its ceiling given the amount of talent they have. So we'll see what Aller does once he's there. I mean, the other thing to it is that Clifford's so chronically injured that you can almost understand. But anyway, we get now to the last game of the noon slot.
This was going to be one of the best days of my life. So anyway, let's revisit what I said previewing this game, which is that, first off, a big key for Illinois would be everyone's loading the box now. Chase Brown's getting hit in the backfield a lot. And, what they're doing in the passing game, which is to say these just little things into the flat, are not really dissuading people from loading the box. They got to attack down the seams. They got to unleash big time Tommy.
With this
Purdue secondary could be had. Did I think they would do that? Well, yeah. This is a coaching staff that has shown the ability to adjust within a game, let alone game to game. I thought I did think that they got kind of caught looking ahead to the Purdue game against Michigan State, maybe came out a little flat. But having been knocked off a little bit, they're going to come out with some edge here against a team that is spiraling after getting vaporized by a couple of teams that Illinois beat. And also, you know, my concern was that, you know, will Purdue, you know, will Aiden O'Connell be able to beat the pass rush enough to make big plays in the passing game? He's not going to get a lot of opportunities to beat Devin Witherspoon, but guys like Payne Durham can't really be covered by anybody else on Illinois. It's just such a tough matchup. But surely the pressure is going to be there. Instead, it was basically exactly... it's like the game script was designed to attack everything that I love. And Purdue came out immediately talking shit, you know, making some kind of, you know, some of those just little things after the flag that, like, you know, with the official has to have their back turned. It's just like, it's not like you really want a flag on that. It's just like you're trying to mess with them early. You're trying to get in their heads. Yeah. They successfully did that to us. So what happened in the when Purdue was on offense was Devin Witherspoon locked Charlie Jones up pretty good until an official declared intercepting the ball illegal in a real head-scratcher for me, because I certainly thought when I saw the flag that pass interference had been called on Charlie Jones, who tackled Devin Witherspoon before he could intercept the ball. That was not the case. On the next play after the flag, O'Connell sailed a pass a little bit into the end zone, which was fortunate to him because Witherspoon missed picking it off by half an inch. It's one of those things where, of course, if you're playing this in a video game and the guy does that animation, he's going to catch it no matter where it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't have possibly missed his hands by less. I mean, but go back to that penalty. I mean, that's the kind of play that he's going to, that NFL scouts are going to, NFL teams are going to pay him a lot of money because that play is on his highlight reel. It has been ruled a penalty. I don't know what to say. This was the same crew of officials that did the IU Bloomington game. Of course, there were a lot more reasons than we lost, but when you have a man coverage type of scheme, you get four pass interference penalties all year. I didn't think they played appreciably different. They got five against Purdue. So anyway, another thing that went wrong was Tavion Nicholson going out, our second corner. He apparently messed up his wrist pretty badly during the game, had surgery during the game to fix it after making a play on a ball with a messed up wrist. But with him out, Witherspoon was still locking up Charlie Jones. Then we had a bunch of freshmen, young guys that just could not stick with it. I mean, in particular, Payne Durham became a huge target. Now, why this was even able to happen was because, well, Purdue figured out that the defensive pass rush and, you know, all this pressure at the line was being caused by Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton and just those two guys. So you double-team them when they're in the game. Nobody else can beat, you know, a single guy. And this is not with a great offensive line. So O'Connell had absolutely all day, was never sacked.
Yeah, zero sacks.
The pass rush just never materialized. It was an absolute nightmare. I don't really know how to put this one on Ryan Walters. There's been some injuries that took away his depth in the front seven. Obviously, he lost his second corner during the game. Playing man coverage against Jeff Brom Purdue. That's a pretty significant one. I don't know how you put this on him because I think he did... I think he's done about as best as could be expected. He developed a strategy, it kind of teams adjusted, and it hasn't been anywhere near as effective because he just doesn't have the pieces to count to play with. And Purdue was able to get some running room as Illinois sort of
they got enough.
Backed off a little bit. They got enough. On the other hand, on the offense, I don't know what happened. There were very few things called that I would say were designed to take guys out of the box. There was maybe one you know, sideline type of throw, you know, go route type of throw that was hit to Brian Hightower for a big gain. There weren't any attacks in the seams. There were some throws over the middle that mainly happened as a result of the play breaking down, wide open tight ends dropping balls anyway. And fundamentally, the Illini completely failed to protect the line of scrimmage. The big consequence of Illinois not doing anything to force the defense out of the box is that Chase Brown is now just getting hit by three guys in the backfield every single time he gets the ball. It's been like this for a number of games. He's really been doing a lot of this work himself, but things really came to a head because at some point the Chase Brown break three tackles in the backfield offense is gonna break down. I don't understand why Isaiah Williams got all of the punt returns and like three touches on offense.
Yeah.
He was doing very poorly at spotting the punt returns. And he did, I thought he should have been given more chances to do something because that would also, you know, force them to abandon the box a little bit, but that never happened. And I don't know if it was because of things that weren't called or because my favorite Illini quarterback in a long time just made a bunch of really bad reads. Certainly played the worst game of the season by a pretty wide margin. By the time he threw the interception, the Illini were flailing, but missed a bunch of reads. Had to run it a lot. Probably could have run it more. Everything just melted down. The Illini scored every time they were in the red zone. The problem is that was only once. Against this vaunted Purdue defense. That I will put on the coaches. The good news is we locked up the architect of the Chase Brown get hit in the backfield, break three backfield tackle. The brilliant thing about that offense is that when Chase Brown breaks those three backfield tackles, well, now there's only eight guys, right? He's got all three. So he goes into the secondary having broken three tackles. Well, now there's a mismatch.
All right, I'm going to derail you here. I think you might have just set our new record for longest monologue, although I could probably go back. I'm sure I've had some bad ones. I can be bad too, but I'm going to pose a few questions to you here. So the Isaiah Williams thing, as you mentioned, recorded a total of three catches for 16 yards. The box scores that I'm looking at aren't especially good about tracking targets, but when I've watched Illinois, I have generally thought to myself, I get that Chase Brown's their best player on offense by a pretty wide margin, and I get that stylistically this is how they want to be. You mentioned a lot of the passes that they do throw are, you know, sort of these little trickeration, fripperation things to tight ends in the flat or throwbacks to tight ends, things that are close to the line of scrimmage and often to tight ends.
Fake the handoff to the jet sweep guy and then throw it to that guy in the flat. For no gain.
Sometimes I like that kind of thing when it's mixed in, like if you've just used the jet motion normally. I don't mind that kind of thing in and of itself, but I agreed that you do have to make the read and determine if the defender has been fooled at all by you pulling the ball. But anyway, the Isaiah Williams thing, I have wondered on multiple occasions, especially in the game against Michigan State when he took a simple slant and then broke several tackles and went for, what, a 60-something yard touchdown.
Yeah, that was exactly the kind of guy that was a huge play threat against a Purdue secondary that is not really that athletic.
I have wondered why they don't find other ways to get him involved. I don't recall seeing him getting the ball on sweeps or end-arounds anymore. They still do a lot of quick hitter things with him to get him the ball quick in space. But as you mentioned, it's a lot of horizontal stuff. Like, I still think they ought to be attempting more things like quick slants and crossing routes to get him the ball clear of the line of scrimmage in space so you don't have to have seven other guys execute blocks correctly without holding for the play to work. It's just a thought I've had. And the other thing is, I thought, given what we saw in a few games earlier this season, that Pat Bryant was on the short route to stardom in this league. I think he still could be long-term. But it really looks like this offense doesn't want to feature him or doesn't know how to. And I'm not exactly sure why.
I don't understand what's happened from the non-conference because, again, you know, obviously this isn't Chattanooga. But this defense also is not Iowa. I mean, I do not understand there was not that much wind in the stadium. I do not understand why they didn't even try to attack Purdue downfield in this, you know, especially down the seams.
It is a little
until desperation time. Same thing against Michigan State. I don't quite know how to explain it. Beyond the offensive strategy, they just didn't seem to be the ones with the fire under their ass. And I can't believe that Purdue was the one that came out like this, given what happened to them the last 2 weeks.
Hey, you know, in spite of all these things, it's not as though Illinois got blown out of the water here. This was a 21-21 game going into the fourth.
Purdue really dominated in the total yards, though.
Yeah. So to address the Purdue side of this a little bit, we don't want to make this entirely a one-team affair. The one thing that does impress you in a game like this is normally, again, we've mentioned this in the past, we talk about Jeff Brohm and play calling, and he's far from the only coach that in times of stress will often cling to the thing they trust the most. And usually for Jeff Brohm, that's the intermediate passing game. Yeah. And a lot of time that ends up extending games that don't need to be extended. It has lost them a couple games, I believe. I still think they should have beaten Penn State to open the season.
And he did a similar thing late in this game here. Of course, he saw what Mel Tucker did last week to beat the Illini and said, okay, that needs to be part of my game plan.
I can top that, yeah.
That's got to be part of my game plan. Of course, it wasn't anywhere near in as dire of a situation. But, yeah, at one point during the game, there were just back-to-back pass interference calls that I really didn't agree with very much. And I thought, but like, you know, it's not necessarily that I thought the fix is in. It's just this wasn't the way they've been calling this penalty all year.
That's the thing that always infuriates me the most. It's the reason why I complain much more about basketball officiating than football, because that is a game where from one half to another, you're very often looking at two totally different sports.
So what I kept yelling later in that game was that due to what the rules were that day, if Jeff Brohm loses this game from this position, he probably shouldn't be the head coach anymore.
So to get to the point I was actually making, though, in spite of all that tendency and play calling preferences, Purdue maintained a reasonably balanced game script here, which is, again, not the thing that they usually do in times of stress, but 40 pass attempts to 33 rushes. And that's even, again, so Maccabee's overall numbers look, because he had the huge majority of the carries. But 28 for 106 yards is good enough, but that includes a 28-yarder. So on a down-to-down basis, the run game wasn't getting a whole lot for Purdue, but they stuck with it. And I think that's just so important for them to do. It relieves pressure on their passing game. And it may be as simple as the fact that, like, at the beginning of the year, they hadn't identified Maccabee as a guy who would factor in the way that he has. Now that they do know they've got him, though, he's got to be a big part of the game plan these last couple games if they want to try to lock up the division.
And to my point about what it would mean to lose that game, they didn't. Jeff Brohm had his guys absolutely ready to play. He had a strategy that Illinois was unable to adapt to. He was able to get the band to come and literally never stop playing ever, even once. I mean,
wouldn't that be your approach though, as a visiting coach? I would do that. I'd be like, yeah, I'll pay whatever fine you get. I just need you to be making noise while the other offense is on the field the entire time.
I mean, for God's sake, I managed to convince a Purdue fan behind me that we'd be really embarrassed if the Purdue fans made more noise than us while Purdue was on offense. And this is the problem, right? For Illinois is just keep my head down and keep plugging away, praying for a game like this with some stakes, and they get there and completely blow it, as should basically be expected. It's got the vibes of 2011, where it went from nothing is off the table, we're definitely not going to the BCS title game, but nothing is off the table yet. And then 2 weeks later, it's, oh, are we going to win again this year? Oh, okay, we're just going to fire the coach that took us to the Rose Bowl after we lose out. Oh, fun. That's cool. That's not what I was expecting 2 weeks ago, but I guess that's what we're doing now. I'm hoping that Illinois is able to pull out of this tailspin a little sooner than 11 years from now. But Yeah. 12,000 extra people came to watch them play Michigan State because people thought, finally, they're doing it. I'm coming back. That game, of course, scared exactly 12,000 people off based on the attendance figures.
You're talking relative to the previous game before Michigan State, so yeah.
Yeah, there may come a day when there will hopefully come a day when I'm reasonably happy to be going to what is hopefully not the goddamn Pinstripe Bowl, because it will almost certainly still represent the top of the mountain as far as we're concerned. But we had for one brief moment the ability to put up a title in something meaningful for the first time since 2001 and completely shat the bed. And it's not like we did that against Michigan. It's not like we did it against Ohio State. It's not like we did that against even Penn State. It was against a Purdue team that had gotten vaporized by Wisconsin and Iowa the 2 weeks prior.
I'm not going to tell you not to be upset about this, but I do want to wind the clock back to September of last year, when you argued, and I could not disagree with you, that Bielema was going to be a disaster, and you were basically counting down the minutes to buyout day. Given that position, which again was not unreasonable at the time, even with these last two very disappointing weeks, I still have to say the Bielema project is considerably ahead of schedule, which I know is not what you want to hear right now.
Yes. Well, that's true, but basically what it is it's the difference between, like, you know, prior to getting, you know, the last 10 years have mostly just been, you know, Prometheus being punished for giving fire to humans. Oh, cool. It's time for the Eagles to come and eat out my liver again. Awesome. I wonder how much it's going to hurt this time, right? Yeah. To not flying too close to the sun, but trying to take off and crashing into the power lines.
You know, there's probably an analogy to made here between Illinois football and, like, the Wayne County jail site, but it just occurred to me now. It's not properly incubated, so I'll marinate on that and let you know if I come up with a good way to phrase that.
And it's also what sucks is that we had to lock up this offensive coordinator, and then he decided to just be like, hey, what if I wasn't sure how to attack a mid-defense 2 weeks in a row? But, yeah, there'd probably be a little more hope to, like, a quicker recovery, I guess, if we didn't have to go play Michigan and then play Northwest. If we had anything but the best resume in the conference and the worst resume in the conference to end the year,
yeah,
there would maybe be a little more, I don't know. Get back to me in a few weeks. I'm trying to figure out how to be excited about going to fucking Las Vegas, where, again, I know I will inevitably run into a bunch of Michigan fans at 9 a.m. local time there, who will, of course, you know, their team's going to kick the shit out of us, and they will laugh at the idea that we ever thought we mattered. And to be fair, it is pretty funny. Necessary element to comedy, and it has not passed yet.
Understood. I think that's maybe going a little far. Like, I am not one to stand up for the Michigan fan base here, but I don't think they would be quite that. Like, you're not in the big house obstructing their view. I'll put it that way. So I don't think they're going to be quite so confrontational about the entire concept of you as a person as you would get in that situation. So anyway, anyway.
So somebody did down in front us.
It's not then, a joke. It will absolutely happen to you.
No, I'm saying at the Illinois game. And then, you know, because it's like biggest game of my life, we just kind of, you know, we moved a little bit and then got a exceptionally stern second salvo, which caused his son to be like, Dad, oh my God, what are you doing? Just let it go, man. We're like two rows up.
Yeah. No, that's pretty typical. So speaking of Michigan, afternoon game against Nebraska, pretty uneventful. They win by the score of 34 to 3, not a whole lot to see here. I still don't think Michigan's passing offense has developed in a way that will let them contend against the likes of a Georgia or a Clemson or a whoever they would see in the playoff if they make it there, which they probably will even if they lose to Ohio State. Now, that being said, the run game may well be good enough to carry them to victory against the Buckeyes, who have become, probably not by design but by injury, I would expect them to look pretty one-dimensional when they play. So I got nothing for you in terms of the X's and O's of this game. I didn't watch a moment of it, and I don't think there's really a whole lot to say. I think in the context of the coaching search, you can just about rule out Mickey Joseph here. There probably was never much of a chance, but again, rumors were moving around, you know, a couple weeks ago that they were close to making a decision, and the timing of that would generally tend to favor the interim. We scratched our heads at that at the time. Nothing has happened since then to change our minds on that. They're terribly injured in the quarterback room, and so the offense is no longer able to carry its side of the equation, which this year has been damn near all of it because the defense has been so bad that they only gave up 34 to a Michigan team that has no problem running up the score when they can. Again, I think says a little bit more about Michigan and the way that this offense is still operating with something of a restrictor plate, and maybe we'll see, like we did last year, that they have another gear they can kick it into when the chips are down, but so far they have not done so, and that's really about all there is to say about this game.
I mean, Nebraska's just had, for their quarterback situation to fall apart to the extent that it has, certainly hasn't worked to Mickey Joseph's favor, but also, I mean, you're trying to swing for the fences, right? I don't know what that guy gives you.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going with, again, I don't believe he's got any previous head coaching experience. I guess what you're seeing pretty plainly here is Nebraska's next head coach is probably going to be going straight back to the well in the transfer portal. A combined effort of 10 for 19 for 71 yards from Purdy and Smothers. I think if you put Smothers back in an option-based system, kind of like Frost was trying to run, he would fit that kind of thing, but there's been no indication that he is a match at all for what they're trying to do this year.
What else do you need to say about this game? It was a 30.5 point line. Michigan covered by 3.
Barely. By scoring 10 points in the fourth quarter. And yeah, J.J. McCarthy,
which was on a fumble recovery on offense.
Right. And, you know, J.J. McCarthy completed 8 passes. I mean, I don't think this game tells you anything about their prospects at the end of the year. Again, you are...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Upping the challenge level considerably next week, notwithstanding your current opinion of your team.
Not anymore, or not. No, not ever since they decided they figured out that only 2 of the front 7 can really rush the passer.
All right, man. Again, I understand where you are right now, so I'm not going to fight you too hard on this, but to argue that Illinois is not considerably more of a challenge than Nebraska as we sit here on November 15th, 2022, is a little bit... living in the sad.
October was fucking awesome, man.
Elsewhere in the afternoon slate, and again, because of the sun being a thing that doesn't come out very much, only afternoon and noon games this past week, and also this coming week. Hugely consequential game.
Yeah, it's the night game. If it starts at 3:30 Eastern, it's the night game.
But it's, you know, it's not... I understand the concern for people driving home in the dark, but you're driving home in the dark from a 3:30 kickoff anyway. And as far as the weather goes, it's not like we're playing these games on the surface of Mercury, and when the sun goes down, it goes to like minus 200 degrees or whatever. Like, I just think that the lack of night games is, again, a missed opportunity. You could have one night game a week, and it wouldn't be that big of a burden. But anyway, hugely consequential game in the Big Ten West standings. Wisconsin 10, Iowa 24. Iowa's going to win this freaking division with a bottom 10 offense in the country, aren't they?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, did you really think that there could truly be an interesting champion in college football 2022 in any division? I believe I had this opinion on the Off Tackle Empire Twitter account, which is that chaos in the Big Ten West apparently involves something like Illinois face planting whenever faced with stakes, and Iowa just kind of shitting and farting their way to a three-loss division championship, gaining 146 yards on offense in a 24-10 victory. I don't see what's chaotic about that. That sounds like the most orderly thing I've ever heard in my goddamn life.
Yeah.
Nothing changing, and Kirk Ferentz very smugly telling you all how correct he was to never change anything and how much of a genius his kid is.
He's going
to
extend Brian another 10 years after the end of the season.
No, he won't. Gary Bardo will extend.
Right,
Brian Ferentz.
But it'll be.
Are you implying that Kirk has any power over Brian Ferentz?
No, you're right. You're right.
He's an independent actor.
I've forgotten about the completely.
Are you suggesting nepotism?
I've forgotten about the completely effective control mechanism that is in place to ensure that everything is above board and fair, and there is no nepotistic activity occurring in Iowa City. Thank you very much. Anyway. Iowa got to 146 yards, which is probably, if I had to guess, I would say that's probably what? They're like third or fourth best total of the season. Looks completely comfortable eliminating a hated blood rival from realistic contention. You could make a case that every other coach except Brett Bielema in this division should be fired for allowing Iowa to win it.
Well, and again, to my point about what's chaotic about this, remember how mad I was last year at every other Big Ten West team,
yeah,
including Illinois, for letting Iowa win this division? It's exactly the same thing as last year. Iowa sucked then. They suck now. They're going to win the division anyway. I wish that I'd put all of my account on Purdue Moneyline Insurance instead of just a third of it, because I would have enough money to go and just buy some tickets directly behind the away sideline of the Big Ten championship game and just get drunk and scream targeted and specific abuse at the Iowa bench for 4 hours like it's a Detroit City FC game or a harassing Illini hockey game. Just go out and have real goblin hours up in here.
So if you look at the numbers, sack adjusted, Iowa's only running the ball for about 2 yards a carry.
Peters is probably an improvement.
Peters has fewer than 100 yards passing. And it's just like it didn't matter because Wisconsin was worse. I mean, they had 24 carries from their running backs for fewer than 70 yards. Mertz had a little bit more through the air, but threw two bad interceptions. Like, I don't know how it keeps happening. Like, it's, I don't get it, man.
And you know what? At this point, I'll tell anybody who's listening, I'm pulling for Iowa to win the Big Ten West. You know why? Because that will make the largest number of people unhappy. And that's really all I want at this point.
Yeah. In terms of game flow, I don't know what else there really is to say. Perhaps mildly interesting that Iowa got another new receiver into the mix in Deontay Vines, but we're talking about 3 for 25, which in the Iowa offense is about the equivalent of 6 for 80. So
Graham Mertz was outgunned at quarterback by a guy that went 14 for 23 for 94 yards.
Well, he was outgunned only in the sense that, like, it's like a thing where if you make too much noise, like, the guards wake up and you have to restart the sequence. And so by not doing much of anything, Spencer Petras managed to avoid impacting the game in any meaningful way.
Yeah, just imagine Graham Mertz going to sleep and seeing, you know, Spencer Petras's, like, Cabbage Patch Kid's ass face in his dreams going, "A curious game, Graham. The only winning move is not to throw."
Yeah. I mean, if you look at this drive chart, it's just, you can look into it for a long time. I would advise against that. There were two scoring plays in the first quarter, relatively early. Well, yeah, I'd say relatively early on. But other than that, I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 punts in the first quarter. Or in the first half, rather. I'm sorry. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
eight more. 18 punts. That's not really as many as I thought it would be, to be honest. That there were as many points on the board as there were in this game is kind of remarkable.
There were under 400 yards of offense.
Yeah.
Total.
Total offense. And again, remember, Michigan State, Rutgers, not exactly the highest powered offenses in the country, both got to around 450 in their matchup against each other. So, this game, boy. I hope you didn't watch it. I put it on because it ended up being the most competitive of the three in the afternoon slate. So I was like, I guess this is where I'll leave it. We had the in-laws over, so... all right, let's get to...
I was busy during this game. I think during about half of it, I was eating Fiesta Cafe, which I will still say is the best Mexican restaurant in Champaign, non-Maze division. And then I think during most of the fourth quarter of this game, I was just kind of like sitting somewhere in the dark by myself, staring straight ahead.
You know, as you do.
Anyway.
Speaking of sitting in the dark, Northwestern 3, Minnesota 31. I guess some credit has to be given to Northwestern offensive coordinator Mike Bajakian for trying to do something, like for taking some action. Like, you remember the recruiting flyer, I believe it was in the Willie Taggart era at Florida State. It's this big, you know, this big, nicely stylized thing, and it's just, do something!
Yeah.
And that's the words that are, like, I think there's other stuff on it, but it's like, huge font, do something.
Well, I actually would compare this also to the newspaper ad for Northwestern football from 1978 that I unearthed in my article on The Pointless Game, which was that their advertising slogan was, Northwestern football, expect the unexpected.
Like them winning a game?
Yeah. Or them hiring away the offensive coordinator that, like, couldn't score at Illinois.
Yeah, man. So again, they did something, but what the something was cycling through quarterbacks like they were trying to find a radio station not playing shitty modern country on I-69 in Indiana, and you get exactly the results that you would expect from that. Four players scratched out 206 yards on 32 attempts, somehow only managed to throw two interceptions, but a couple of these guys are throwing, they have guys throwing like three passes, like, nope, next one, keep going. And it's not like there was a ton of game pressure here, because Minnesota remains pretty limited on offense. They had a pair of long scoring drives in the first half, but they were spread out such that it's not like it's one of those things where Minnesota has the ball for an 8-minute drive and they score, you go three and out, and then they have the ball for another 7 minutes. And like, that can really make it feel like we need to do something right now or this game is going to be over because our defense will collapse on the field. They had a couple of drives like that, but not so close together that they put overwhelming pressure on the Wildcats, but still, Northwestern's own inability to sustain any drives of their own. I think their long drive in the first half was six plays. Gave this one a real air of finality at 14-0 in the second quarter. Minnesota finds themselves right back in the thick of things for the West Division, despite trying to build their offense entirely out of Mohamed Ibrahim. I don't know what the plan is next year, because none of their other tailbacks look anywhere near as good as him, and this passing game still doesn't seem to have much in the way of juice. So that's a next year problem. For this year, their problem is winning these last two games against, again, hated blood rivals, and then they find themselves with a very real chance to be going to Indianapolis.
Yeah, of course, for them to do that, that will require Purdue to lose to Northwestern or Indiana, but
right.
We're going to get into that. Of course, you know, Iowa having the head-to-head over Purdue makes things, you know, checkmate for the villains here.
Yeah, four teams at 4-3. I guess this is as good a time as any to mention that. So in the Big Ten West, you now have Illinois, Iowa, Purdue, and Minnesota all tied, 4-3 overall. As we sit here currently, though, I mean, that's in the conference, by the way. I don't mean overall. So overall conference record. As you mentioned, Illinois, the last two games, by far the most difficult game of any of those teams left with the trip to Michigan. It is at Michigan, right?
Yep.
And then Illinois, which I believe is in Northwestern, which I believe is in Champaign.
No, I mean, it might as well be, but.
Oh, it's also on the road. Okay, yeah. I stand corrected. So Iowa.
Yeah, senior day, too. That's the other great thing. Yeah, saw Chase Brown hobble back to the locker room for his final Memorial Stadium exit. That was a fun sight to see.
Yeah. Minnesota has Iowa and Wisconsin. Iowa has Minnesota and Nebraska. Purdue, as you mentioned.
Always lose on fucking senior day, man.
Yeah, very manageable. Probably the most manageable slate with Northwestern and Indiana as their last two games. So a lot at play there. We'll have a much clearer picture of what the realistic scenarios are after next week when there's a lot of variables eliminated. If you were to take a pick right now, I know we just said there's no way Iowa doesn't win this division because this is just the most Big Ten West thing that we've seen so far. But of those four teams, who do you think ends up on top calling it straight?
I really do think it's Iowa. I mean, because Purdue should have Chuck. I really think that Minnesota's too one-dimensional to beat Iowa. I mean, Minnesota's really kind of just like, you know, Iowa without as good a defense and with a one-dimensional offense.
They have a better running game. Minnesota's running game is considerably better.
It is also a running game, and Iowa stops the run really well. And, of course, you know, prior to it being solved, the Illini defense was sort of comparable to Iowa's against the pass. And what happened was Minnesota's passing game was so bad that when they had to use it, it was an enormous liability. And you can't just keep running the ball.
Yeah. The biggest X factor for Minnesota to me is that their quarterback situation remains a bit unsettled here. My understanding is Kelly Akmana started because Morgan is still injured. Is Morgan's injury the type that allows him to get back into the game? Is he going to be limited at all? I know it doesn't make a huge difference because, again, they're not really going to be weighing it around. Like, if Minnesota's throwing the ball more than 20 times, something has gone terribly wrong for them. And you also saw considerable progression from Kali Ekmanis from his first appearance a few weeks ago where he was a disaster to looking much better, making his first start in a week where presumably they understood early on Morgan's not going to play, so we get this kid the reps. He looked much more up to the task. So maybe it's not as big of an issue as I'm making it. I think if that issue resolves in their favor and either they stick with Kali Ekmanis, he takes another step forward, I think Minnesota still ends up being the team on top. I think they have the best balance. Their defense really is not all that far off of what Iowa's doing. They don't get nearly the same turnovers, but they are very good at kicking opponents off the field. Their own offense is much more... They have the best balance of any of these teams. Purdue will randomly misfire on one side of the ball or the other. Illinois... Usually. Yeah. Well, I mean, their best game, they're probably the best of these four teams, but they don't ever play the best game with all of their pieces at once. Minnesota feels like the more stable product without a serious flaw the way that Iowa does have on offense. So that would be my tentative grip of the situation. But again, in a matter of a few days, a lot of questions are going to be answered. So,
well, again, Minnesota's defense was vulnerable, not just to Penn State, but also to Illinois, the one time in conference play that they really opened things up for DeVito. Had they used that exact same game plan against Purdue, we're not really having this discussion right now. Yeah. But the offensive coordinator that we had to lock up in order to make sure that, like, Georgia or Alabama didn't offer him $2.5 million, it had other plans.
All right, so that brings us to the end of the week that was in the Big Ten. We'll try to keep it timely and take a quick spin around other interesting things in the conference. USC becoming the only realistic playoff contender in the Pac-12 after Washington took down Oregon in a hugely entertaining game.
I hear something very stupid happened.
And then Arizona beat UCLA as well. So imagine...
What stupid thing did Dan Lanning do?
I forget. I don't even know.
Let's see. Well, it looks like he did. I'm seeing Dan Lanning defends a fourth down onside kick decisions. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
So, in the classic Oregon tradition, taking over from Mario Cristobal, of course, you have to feel like you're honoring your predecessors if you make a really terrible decision late in the game that costs you.
Although it is not against Stanford.
True. Stanford, who There may be something to them having domesticated the Hypnotoads. Speaking of Hypnotoads, the Horny Frogs intensify, defeating Texas in a low-scoring game, which has not been TCU's modus operandi this year. But they move to 10-0, obviously in pole position in the Big 12. As I understand, they're doing the divisionless championship game thing, correct?
Yes.
So I guess I'll have to look at the Big 12 standings. I think there's a non-zero chance they see Texas again, isn't there?
I mean, they would have to have a huge-ass conference lead, but Kansas State's the front runner right now.
Well, that would be interesting. So I suppose we might see that then. But anyway, undefeated TCU in year two of Sonny Dykes, I believe, coming over from Crosstown SMU. He's got them playing in... Is this his first year? I could be... Again, time has no...
Yeah, because remember that SMU game was the first year, you know, Tanner Mordecai
still there.
So yeah, that was the first year that happened. So this is year one.
I can't emphasize the extent to which time has no meaning anymore. I cannot emphasize it enough. It turns out that our hopes for Tulane to make the Sugar Bowl were never based in reality. The Sugar Bowl is guaranteed to be SEC Big 12 this year. The Group of Five bid that's available for the New Year's, guaranteed for the New Year's Six, is the Cotton Bowl. That takes the sting out of Tulane losing to UCF midweek. It was mid-afternoon. They play on Saturday. They just usually play midweek. They play again on Thursday. That's why I brought them up. But all of that is irrelevant because we have bowl-bound UConn at the expense of Liberty Biberty, no less.
That was the only other detail that I was able to absorb about college football on Saturday, and that did present me with some degree of relief.
I am completely serious when I say Jim Mora Jr. should get serious consideration for Coach of the Year.
Absolutely. Again, not a tremendously difficult schedule, but the type of schedule against which UConn has gone 2-10 in the past.
Hold on just a second here. I'd like to know. I'm going to look up UConn football recruiting. Let's see exactly what it is Jim Mora Jr. is working with here. Okay, so the 2022 class, composite rank 113. That's their current freshman class. Let's back things up a little bit and see, like, let's appreciate the full depth of the talent level here. Okay, 2021, composite rank 114. And let's go back to 2020. I'm going to go back to 2019 as well. 2020, number 119. And 2019. 117. So what was the high number in there? 112 or something like that?
Yes.
That's the composite recruiting class making up this roster. And I couldn't tell you. They probably brought in a few transfers. But to nonetheless take a team that is mostly made of some of the poorest FBS recruiting out there, you know, certainly bottom 15, bottom 20, and get to a bowl game with a game to spare. I believe they moved them to 6-5, right? Because they play in week zero.
I believe they are, in fact, 6-5, yes.
So they could get to 8 wins at UConn in year one with one of the worst, with a bottom 15 recruiting base. It's, give me a better case for Coach of the Year. Who you get? What, are you going to put Jim Harbaugh at me? Fuck that guy. With the recruiting resources he has available, are you kidding me? You're going
to... How about Coach Hype? Josh Heupel.
They'll probably give it to him.
Are you aware of the extent to which he looks like Bobby Hill?
Yes, I have seen the meme. I don't disagree. So it is canon now that Bobby Hill went to Oklahoma.
Gosh, dang, Bobby.
Anyway.
No, there is one more thing we have to address in this non-conference, and that is Texas A&M being eliminated from bowl contention because Auburn drove a Cadillac over them. And, of course, to quote five-star cornerback Denver Harris, Auburn, quote, put a supercharger on that bitch. So Texas A&M, with perhaps the most talented roster in the country by recruiting composite.
At least, yeah, freshman class is number one, yes.
Is 3-7, has a worse record than Rutgers.
Yeah, for most of this year, because it was pretty early on, people were like, oh, ha, 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 gonna buy out Jimbo, ha, 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 gotta pay him all the money. I was like, yeah, come on, guys, let's get serious. They're not gonna buy out
Jimbo Fisher for $100 million. Whatever. They might buy out Jimbo Fisher for $100 million, which is why our damn gas prices are so high, because their boosters control the friggin' market. Like, I mean, so consider this. Texas A&M plays UMass this week because they couldn't even find anybody from the SoCon who wanted to play them. But then to finish the year, they play LSU. And Brian Kelly, after a humiliating and entertaining opening week loss against Florida State, has quietly got LSU right back in the top 10, which you hate to see. But it would be pretty hilarious if he put like a 70 burger on him, and that ended up being the thing that got Jimbo Fisher expelled from Texas A&M, was the most New England guy you will ever meet coming down, taking control of LSU, and getting them running in year one.
Yeah, I'd still root for Jimbo in that game.
Oh, I'd root for him. So, but I would still find some entertainment from it if Kelly puts it on him.
Also, in news that is, of course, relevant to me, Vanderbilt gets their first conference win. Vanderbilt, yes, Millie. Vanderbilt is apparently the word that makes you go woof woof.
Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt gets their first conference win since 2019, taking down number 24 Kentucky.
Yeah, guess Vince Merrill should have bailed for that Michigan State assistant position when he had the chance. We'll still pay you a lot of money. Come recruit for us. Don't be an ass.
And let's see.
Bring them blue chips. Bring the blue chips.
Well, yeah, those are really tasty ones.
Blue corn, hell yeah. Get the queso on it.
Oklahoma now needs to win one of their last two games to go bowling.
And those last two games would be
Oak State and Texas Tech.
Yeah, I was gonna say Bedlam and who? Yeah,
they're winnable for sure.
Texas Tech is doable, yeah.
But still, the prospect of Oklahoma having their backs against the wall to get to a bowl game.
What's like the look? You know what? Let me look up. I have a tab open for bowl ties. Let's see what the most embarrassing bowl that Oklahoma could go to would be.
We've now had a situation like this for so many of the teams that have kind of come and gone as power teams. Still waiting on Alabama and Ohio State, though.
Yeah, I would say keep waiting. Okay, Big 12 bowl tie-ins. Number one, Sugar Bowl. Number two, Alamo. Cheez-It. Texas. Liberty.
Liberty.
Guaranteed rate appears to be the lowest definite tie-in. Other tie-ins, Armed Forces Bowl, First Responder Bowl.
Well, anyway, I am looking at my weather app, and it says stopping soon. So I guess we're stopping soon. Right.
Your source for Big Ten Talk, it's Off Tackle Empire!